so there's a couple of very worthy Dharma topics: ignorance and delusion, and how to watch one's thoughts. Well, the basic trick to knowing how to watch your thoughts is to have a very good armchair, a sofa. Why do you need a sofa? Well, because it's going to be going for quite some time, so you might as well be comfortable. I always had the in the Pali, you always have the different kinds of meditation attainments. And I always have the ananto akaso, space is infinite. I always thought it should be ananto vitako. Thought is endless. So, but I'm quite serious. You know, you're going to be, the thoughts are part of our mind, and they'll be with us all our lives until we die. So we might as well be comfortable with them. Yeah, and we might as well be friendly with them. Yeah, sit down and have a cup of tea with them, and let them say what they need to say. And then there's this kind of a comfortable silence that comes when you're sitting with a good friend and you sort of share an understanding, and you don't need to say anything. Kind of to be with a friend and just, sit on the beach at the sunset and just watch the beach and not to feel like you have to do anything. So that's the kind of comfortable silence with the thoughts. And of course, if you get too oppressive about it, then you sort of, every time a thought jumps into the mind, you jump on top of it and say, no, go away, thought, you're a bad thing. Then of course the thoughts get worried, they get concerned, and when they're worried and they're concerned, then they think about things even more. So the more that we can just be very at ease and just to accept what's going on, then the less this kind of resistance that comes in. Remember, all this activity always comes from tension, and tension always comes from two things fighting against each other. Yeah, you feel that in your body, can't you? Your body gets tense because the two muscles are fighting against each other. When one muscle is moving and the other muscles aren't fighting, then there's no tension. It just moves, finish moving, it relaxes. So this is how our thoughts should be, is that, something to think about it, and then thinks, and then when you stop, then stop. That's all. It relaxes. So this is something not to be made a problem of. So when we're meditating, don't worry yourself with thoughts. Don't be concerned with them. Just do your meditation. Watch your breath. Do your metta. Whatever you're doing in your meditation, just keep on coming back to those things. And don't worry. Thoughts will keep coming, and then just don't worry about them. They'll just keep on coming back, keep on coming back, and keep on coming back. And that's how you train your mind. For the most part, thoughts are not such a big problem. But of course, sometimes they are. So sometimes we do need to work with thoughts more specifically. And of course, in the practice of the... and that's the practice of the second factor of the path, the right thoughts, samasankappa. And so with right practice of right thought, then we take the unwholesome thoughts and replace them with wholesome ones. So thoughts of desire, then we replace with thoughts of renunciation, thoughts of anger and ill will, and so on, replace with thoughts of metta and kindness. And so that's like a substitution method, which is also can be a very powerful training in mind. But again, it's not something to be forced, but it's something where these trainings, they're always their most effective if they're just done very gently and very consistently over a long period of time. So not to try to force it in a meditation retreat or something like that, and sort of try to do it too intensely, but just each time, just sort of very, whenever the mindfulness comes up, then just try to replace the unwholesome thoughts with wholesome thoughts, and just keep on doing that persistently. That's interesting. It's probably one of the only places in the suttas where it actually encourages unmindfulness. You know, the actual word is asati, not be unmindful of the thoughts. Yeah? So it's actually encouraging you to be unmindful. No, but that way you basically just distract yourself. Yeah. So you know, whatever, go for a walk or read a book or have a cup of tea or do anything like that. So you just sort of do something else. Turn the mind away and you can sort of break the spell that the thoughts have. And, you know, we all know that that's what happens sometimes. You just forget. Your mind's running over with things and keeps on running over and over, but then something happens, something else comes up and you just forget about it. So this is what that one is just simply forgetting it. And, then afterwards sometimes you look back and think, oh, what was all that about? Why was I getting caught up in that particular problem, it's become part of the past. So, then the next one is actually the most interesting one, which I'll come back to in a minute, but the last one is the crushing of mind with mind. So you sort of beat down and constrain mind with mind. So of course that's always the last one, not the first one, right? So all the other options fail, then you kind of force your mind not to think about it. Clench your teeth. Just make yourself not do it. And sometimes you have to do. For example, if you're going to do something that's very unwholesome, for example, then you just have to sort of make yourself not do it. Sometimes you just have to do that. Right? So, but that's a last resort. And it's kind of interesting that particular practice, and there's a description of the different jhana practices, and that's the kind of the last of the most extreme of the Buddhist practices, and it's the first and gentlest practice of the jhanas. Yeah? So there's that kind of overlap there. So that's something, anyway, it's something we've got in common with Jainism. We can discuss it, have a similar meditation technique of beating down, crushing and constraining mind with mind. So that's that one, and then the last one is the stilling of the sankhara, the stilling of the thought, they translate thought formation or the activity of thought. It's a sankhara, and here sankhara has a meaning of activity, but also it seems to have a meaning of cause as well. And it has like a man walking would see someone standing and then just say, well, why don't I stand? Someone standing would see someone sitting, so they say, why don't I sit? So they sit down. Someone sitting would see someone lying down, so they think, why don't I lie down? So in a way, it's just like suggesting to the mind to allow the mind to settle and not have to, not be actually doing what it's doing. But I think there's also something more to that. So that in itself is quite a good practice, but I think there's something more to that is because the idea of the cause and where it's coming from. And in some cases when we're really upset and caught up with thoughts, then we need to try to uncover what the cause is, sort of look in why are we getting caught up in this? Why is that such a big deal for us? And sometimes when we do that, we realize that the thing that was on the surface actually is disguising something which is far deeper and far more important. There's something underneath. And so we go underneath the surface and try to see what is the cause of things, investigate. And maybe there's some kind of emotional blockage or some kind of misunderstanding or something like that which is causing us to go up and do all that kind of thinking and so on. So these are the five methods in the Vitakasantana Sutta, which are a very good and very practical way of dealing with thoughts. And the Buddha said at the end of it that he had to practice as usual. He himself had to practice and struggle with all of these things during his period of striving for an awakening. And it was only after you realized awakening that he sort of mastered all of these different things. So it's, you know, just a good reminder for us. Remember that the Buddha had the same problems. You know, the Buddha went and sat in meditation when he was still Bodhisattva, and he's kind of sitting there thinking about this and that. Wonder what Yashoda is doing. Yeah. And am I going to get anything to eat tomorrow? And ooh, that ant's biting really hard. And he's dealing with the same kinds of ordinary everyday problems that you and I are dealing with. So there's another interesting aspect to thought which I actually came across in one of Ken Wilber's books, and which I thought was actually really quite interesting and quite profound, and has been quite useful for me personally. And that is to look at, because when we're thinking, we're actually thinking grammatically. We actually use language to think. And we can learn something from the way that we're using language. And one of the things that he pointed out is that is to look at what is the person that you're using in your internal monologue. Is it a first person, a second person, or a third person? Yeah. And that tells you something quite important. You know, especially if you have thoughts of anger or you're having some kind of monologue or dialogue with somebody in your head. If you're having a conversation in third person, this person is like that, he's like this, she's like that, then that person is out of the room. Right? They're not listening to you. They're completely cut off. So you have this idea in your mind that you're completely cut, somebody's completely cut off. If it's second person, then you're having a conversation with them. Right? So you maybe say the same things, right? But it's very different to say so-and-so is nasty. It's very different to say you are nasty, right? Because if you're saying to you, then there's some communication happening, yeah? And of course, then the most real of them is the I. You're speaking in terms of I. Because actually, that's all who's there. And so this is where the notion of thought and the notion of ignorance coming together. Because actually, there's just you sitting there in your room. And that other person isn't really there. Yeah? So whatever kind of conversation you're having is not a conversation with that other person. It's a conversation with part of your own mind. Yeah? And so that then becomes a little bit disturbing if you reflect on that. That if you're having a conversation in first person, well, that's okay. You're saying, I do this and I do that, and it's fairly realistic. If you're saying you, then at least one part of your mind is talking to another part of your mind. But if it's he, she, it, it is the worst of all, then then these parts of your mind are not even talking to each other anymore. Yeah? They're just backbiting at each other. Yeah? And you're backbiting at your own mind. So that when you start to reflect on that, it's actually quite disturbing. And you realize that actually some parts of your own mind are so dissociated and so cut off that you can't even communicate with them anymore. So when you realize that, it's also quite useful. So you can then invite that person to come round for a cup of tea in your mind and have coffee or something, and then just sort of sit down and actually talk to them rather than talking in third person about them. So that particular reflection, I think, is very useful and does teach us something quite meaningful about the nature of delusion and what's going on in our own mind. And how we're constantly making up reality, actively creating it. And when you're using your mind in that way, if you're having thoughts, the thoughts of anger and the dissociated thoughts, then you are not merely, you know, not talking, not communicating with a part of your mind, but you're actually reinforcing those boundaries in the mind. You're reinforcing the delusion. You're making it worse as you go. So the more that we can bring everything in, And this is what they mean when they talk about integration, yeah? To talk one part of the, different parts of the mind talking to each other, working together in harmony. So the more that we can bring it in, then the more the mind will be in harmony. And then the less talking that there'll have to be. And again, just to think about that in terms of those three persons is actually quite interesting. If you think that you have issues with a third person and they're not even in the room and you're not even talking to them, then when are you going to ever settle that issue? Yeah? You can't. It's just going to keep on going on and on and on as long as that person is out of the room, because you're not doing anything that would solve it. So that's what keeps going. When it's a second person, well, you can talk to them, and after a while you can sort things out, maybe. And so that there's an end in sight. Yeah? When there's a first person and it's just me, just talking to oneself, well, you don't really have much to say, you know. You kind of know all the things that you know already, so it tends to get a bit quieter. So this is quite a very, I find a very useful thing, both for learning about one's own mind and also for knowing how to gradually be able to still the mind. So when one of the basic principles of Buddhism is that understanding is something that comes from like a direct seeing or direct knowing. And Buddha, of course, talked about three kinds of wisdom: Cittamaya Panya, Suttamaya Panya, and Bhavanamaya Panya. It's the wisdom that comes from thinking, the wisdom that comes from learning, and the wisdom that comes from meditation. So as always, in the teachings that the Buddha gave, it's very reasonable. And sometimes you will hear people saying, oh, you know, what you learn from books isn't real wisdom. Well, no, that's not what the Buddha said. He said it's a certain kind of wisdom. It's Suttamaya Panya. Yeah? Or people will say it's only thought, you know, it's only thinking. They're kind of very dismissive of it. Well, the Buddha said, no, there's some kinds of wisdom you get from thinking. Cittamaya Panya. But what he also said is that there are some kinds of wisdom that you can't get either from thinking or from learning, from external sources. And that's the Bhavanamaya Panya. That's the wisdom that comes from meditation. So that complements the other two. It doesn't replace them. And that wisdom that comes from meditation, of course, will, in the end, it will see much more deeply than those other forms of wisdom. Is where the liberating wisdom comes from, that wisdom of meditation. And the wisdom of meditation itself essentially comes from the clarity of the mind that is able to see things. And we'll be looking at that simile in the Samanyapala Sutta next week, is the simile of the clear forest pool, and looking at the water that settles down and seeing all the fish and the stones and so on in there. So just being able to see, and it's from that clear seeing that the really deep insights will come. So what thought tends to do, of course, is thought ruffles the surface of the pool of water in our mind. It can serve some purposes and give us some kinds of wisdom and understanding. But it goes on too long, it becomes too much, and so it needs to be quietened down, it needs to be stilled. And of course this is what we're doing through our meditation. At the end of the day, this is where we learn our this is where we penetrate through the delusion and penetrate through ignorance. As long as the mind keeps on thinking, the problem with the thinking mind is that one tends to believe one's own thoughts. So one tends to think that one knows the truth, And so, of course, thinking that you know the truth is a very different thing from actually seeing the truth. And so this is the problem that we need to let go of, that thinking to be able to actually see. And when you see with clarity, you know, delusion again is very much like all the different clouds that are in the mind. In the water, the ripples on the surface of the water, it's just distorting the shapes of everything. So that everything that goes just becomes a different, it's different, it's not how it really is. And so the mind's constantly changing, constantly shifting, and we can't see what's actually happening. And so this is the nature of delusion. But delusion is like I would make a distinction between delusion and ignorance. And this distinction I first heard made by Bhante Gunaratna. And delusion is like an active force in the mind, which distorts and twists things. Whereas ignorance is much more fundamental. Ignorance is a basic, fundamental unknowing of the Four Noble Truths, unknowing of the reality. So of course this is the simile that the Buddha always gave for this ignorance, is it's like this great mass of darkness, Mahatamo Khanda, the great mass of darkness. Yeah? So it's like a fog, it's like a blindness. So that fog or that blindness is lifted and is penetrated through with the light of understanding. And there's no coincidence that the Buddha used these terms as like metaphors for what's going on. You can actually see a light, and you can actually see the darkness receding and the mind becoming more clear and more and more clear. And it's like a light in the mind. And as that light grows and becomes stronger, the ignorance gradually dissipates. But the ignorance, which is the really deep form of ignorance, the really fundamental form of ignorance, is something that's very, very hard to see. It's very, very subtle. If it was easy to see, then we'd all have realized it long ago. So it's that very, very subtle kind of thread, or that very subtle, more subtle than anything else. I always remember from the teachings of Ajahn Mahabhur, he said that ignorance is the most beautiful universe in the world. It's just that last thing that seems so small and seems so inconsequential, but actually is bigger than everything else and is the seed from which everything else comes from. So to get rid of ignorance, then we need the light of the mind. To get the light of the mind, we need samadhi. To get samadhi, we need to do our meditation, develop the joy, the rapture of meditation. To develop the joy, the rapture of meditation, we need to abandon the kinds of wrong thought and distracting thoughts and these kinds of things. And this is how the course of meditation goes. Little bit by little bit. Nothing to do with you. Nothing to do with me. Just the process of nature going step by step. This is my little talk on ignorance and thinking this evening. So I offer that for your reflection.